Now, picture this, a photo with the heads of Democratic candidates for president swapped in onto the bodies of characters from Harry Potter, draped in Hogwarts robes. Might get a chuckle from some people, not from others. Our next guest says viral products like this are popping up more and more around the internet, and it's just one sign of the way celebrity fan culture is finding its way into American political life. Amanda Hess is a critic for the New York Times, where she writes about internet culture, including a recent piece called United We Stand. Amanda, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start with this concept of stan, because it's important to this piece you wrote. And for people who aren't immersed in internet culture, it is completely meaningless. Define it for us, the stan.
Yeah. Okay. So the stan is basically an obsessive fan. And it's a term that came out of an Eminem song called Stan that was about a fan of his who was so obsessed with him that he basically ends up killing for Eminem. And so stan has been like reclaimed by people who love celebrities to the extent that like they will metaphorically on Twitter, at least, like kill for them.
Right. So they'll say, I stan Beyonce, for example, or other insert celebrity there.
Yeah. And now people are starting to say that about candidates that they support in the upcoming election, too.
Yeah, and that's the focus of a couple pieces you've written. We're taking reporting our madness for celebrities in some ways and taking it into the political world. Talk about how you've seen that happening.
You know, I think I really started to notice it in the run-up to the 2016 election. There was this meme that defined the primary that was called Bernie versus Hillary, and it took the form of like a fake civics education poster that was comparing Bernie and Hillary on the issues. Except in the meme, the issues would be like Nintendo games or wolves or Radiohead, and the gist of the meme was that Bernie could speak, you know, very authoritatively on all of these pop culture issues, whereas Hillary was trying to be cool but failing. And I found the meme to be so interesting because it was directly translating these candidates and their ideological divide into something else, like something very pop cultural, in a way that was not necessarily how the Bernie Sanders campaign might want to promote its candidate, in that, like, a lot of people found the meme to be sexist, and that was a problem for Bernie's campaign. And also, you know, Bernie Sanders is a candidate who really kind of rejects talking about pop culture. He wants to talk specifically about the things that animate him and that he wants to change about the country. And so I was fascinated by the fact that his fans were doing this thing that he probably wouldn't sanction himself and that his campaign certainly wouldn't do.
And that was one example. And you've seen it snowball since then in different ways for different political figures, candidates, and others. Talk about how that's exploded since then.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you are on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, or Reddit, you see politics discussed in a way that feels more like it's a pop cultural product. And sometimes that's very literal in the case of, you know, actually photoshopping Elizabeth Warren's face onto Hermione's body from Harry Potter. And sometimes it's a little bit less literal. But it's just become this very powerful way of experiencing politics and something that was just not possible before all of these crowdsourced platforms arose.
This is a lot about the internet, but it's not just about the internet. You also mentioned the people who tour Donald Trump rallies. They will travel the country for the sole purpose of participating in this event as though like people might have followed the Grateful Dead back in the day.
Yeah, and I think especially Donald Trump is a very interesting example of this because for years and years before any of these platforms existed, before he ever had any real presidential aspirations, there were people who were kind of like joking about inserting him into the political conversation. So Spy Magazine, which is this satirical magazine that took Donald Trump as one of its like greatest enemies, joked in 1988 that he should run for president. And that was something that to me seemed like a real precursor of a lot of what you see now, and that they were taking this, you know, in this case, it was the opposite. They were taking a pop culture figure and putting him into politics. But so it's something that has existed before, but that's really been, I think, blown up by the internet.
Talking to Amanda Hess from The New York Times, looking at the ways that celebrity culture and fan culture has moved into the political world. And in some ways, you touched on this in one of your pieces, Donald Trump has been doing the attention economy before we called it the attention economy. He was obsessed, I think it's fair to say, like him or not, and really good at creating a brand around himself, just the way that millennials and Generation Z is being coached to for their careers now.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things about the attention economy is this idea that whether you're getting good attention or bad attention, all attention is good. And that's something that I think Donald Trump has always understood. He's always been this controversial figure who sort of drew attention to himself, not necessarily by doing things that were reflected positively on him. And that's so interesting to me because I think the presidency, above all, you know, like if you could assume anything about running for president, it's that you would want people to like you, to like have a positive, to have positive attention on you if you wanted to convince people to elect you. And now I think Donald Trump has really kind of upended that because he has so embraced negative attention and really sort of presented himself as a heel in a way that seems very, very internet savvy, but he was doing all along.
What's the Oscar Wilde quote? The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about. That seems pretty perfect for internet culture.
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure it is.
Now, looking at the ways people are using this crop of Democratic candidates as their fan obsessions, what do you see? Who's benefiting from this and who is not?
I mean, I think that Andrew Yang is the candidate who gets the most attention for turning basically a zero profile into, you know, someone who is standing there on the debate stage where all of these people, you know, like Kirsten Gillibrand, a United States senator, could not make it to where he is. And a lot of that has to do with just like the sheer online energy around him and the branding that has come up really organically from his fans. But at this point, you see it with everyone. The person who I think to me is the most interesting center of that content right now is Elizabeth Warren, because she is being branded online in this way that's very similar to the way that Hillary Clinton's fans sort of created fan fiction and memes around her. But Elizabeth Warren is a very, very different candidate than Hillary was. And so when you see both women as stand-ins for Hermione from Harry Potter, you really collapse the like political distinction between them in a way that I think is not necessarily great for Elizabeth Warren's pitch to America, because Hillary lost, right? So she probably doesn't really want to compare herself too much to her, but that her fans, you know, very enthusiastically are doing anyway.
We're talking to Amanda Hess, critic and internet culture writer at The New York Times, looking at the ways fan culture, the way people, you might expect them to follow celebrities, musicians, actors, whatever, it's really going into American politics, she writes, and the way we talk about, think about, tweet about candidates. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you created or circulated memes about your favorite or one of your favorite political candidates or political figures? Are you someone's political fan? Do you see people doing this online or maybe even in person? Do you see an upside, downside, a little bit of both? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we pick up our talk with Amanda Hess, New York Times critic. She writes about internet culture, and in two recent pieces, she looks at the ways that the kind of fan culture we see around celebrities has found its way into politics, mostly online, a little bit offline, too. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think this kind of fan culture going into the political world is a good thing? It gets people more engaged, or it's a bad thing? It kind of trivializes stuff. What do we stand to gain or lose as a democracy here? And do you share memes? Do you look at memes online about politicians, candidates, other political figures? Have you made one? Or do you think they're silly or funny? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll bring on a caller. Dave is with us in Milwaukee. Dave, hi.
Good afternoon, folks. This is a really great topic. It's 420. So I guess my comment is, it seems like these Trump people come up with these little nasty memes all the time. For instance, when Elizabeth Warren was a professor of color at Harvard, because of her Native American descent, the Trump supporters come up with all these little memes talking about, you know, rude stuff about First Nations people and all that. And I just think it's really rude, and we need to find a way to ban it or get it deplatformed or take it off, like shut down that internet, because it seems like these people are really expressing themselves rudely about a Native American.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Controversy, of course, over Senator Warren's origins. But the Trump supporters, Amanda, and the memes that we've seen surrounding Donald Trump, what have we seen?
Well, first, I guess I would just say that we're not going to be able to unplug the internet, whether that's for better or for worse. But yeah, Donald Trump's fans, and I think this is really a feature of all of these fandoms, are also creating, you know, like anti-memes about other candidates. And that can be just as powerful, I think, as boosting your own candidate, you know, creating images that are meant to defame or tear down someone else, I think, have become really, really powerful.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Amanda, you point toward a double-edged sword. If when people are treating politicians and like talking about them in terms of whatever, Harry Potter or Game of Thrones or Handmaid's Tale, in one sense, you see it could get more people involved and actively engaged in politics. In another sense, by looking at it in these fictional terms, it might make people feel more distant from political realities. How do you try to sort that out?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the fundamental paradox of the whole thing. It can be, I think, so engaging to people to be able to experience politics this way. It's a way of making it more democratic in a way, in that, you know, people who maybe never saw themselves as being interested in having political discussions can find, you know, a point of connection with candidates in this way. And I think that's wonderful. But at the same time, I think that can be a little bit of an illusion, that we don't necessarily have more power over the political process just because we have the power to Photoshop someone into our favorite, you know, movie series.
Another weird gulf that's out there is a substantial portion of the U.S. population who's very active on Twitter, who might see this sort of thing pop up on Facebook and elsewhere. There's a good chunk of people who are totally cut off from that, which sometimes doesn't sound like such a bad thing. And so in some ways, people are living in two different worlds with this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think my grandfather, who's in Wisconsin and listening right now, probably is not experiencing politics in this way. I do think there's a way in which all of our media ecosystems, like, are in conversation with each other. So even if people are not necessarily seeing, you know, a meme about Elizabeth Warren on Twitter, the fandom around her and the way that her persona is pitched online, I think, can feed into how she's portrayed on cable television, for example. So I do think there's a relationship, even if people maybe don't see it directly.
Well, and among those people who are often on Twitter, I think journalists are probably very disproportionately represented, right?
That's very true. I do think Facebook still, and especially for people who are a little bit older, is a really powerful way that people are experiencing politics. So it's not just Twitter, even though I mean, I'll be the first to admit that I check it too much. So.
Talking to Amanda Hess, a critic for the New York Times. She writes about internet culture, and she's written a couple lengthy pieces about the ways that fan culture, the way people might treat or define themselves as fans of a pop culture artist, say a musician or an actor, is finding its way more and more into the political world, especially online, creating memes that portray a candidate sympathetically or unsympathetically, but using ideas from pop culture as well. Amanda, another worry that you have about this, and you touched on this a little bit earlier, is that our online representation, our fan representation of a candidate might start to move more and more away from what they actually stand for.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I find the most interesting about this. So, for instance, Elizabeth Warren, there is a meme about her on Twitter that's really just like short form fan fiction about her. And it's her fans putting her into different scenarios and imagining how she would act. So, you know, Elizabeth Warren always replaces the toilet paper roll after she finishes the last one or whatever. And the point of the meme is that she's a very decent person and a polite and nice person. And it's certainly supposed to be, you know, a positive meme in support of her. But at the same time, it really obscures the fact that her, you know, her ideas are not about being a kind of decent person. They're about creating this like radical change in society. And that just that aspect of her pitch doesn't come through. And instead, it's just totally obscured by her personality. And so maybe that's a positive thing for Elizabeth Warren if it gets some people to say, oh, she seems really nice and I want to vote for a nice person. But I do think it does us a little bit of a disservice in that we're not talking about the issues when we're talking about, you know, what Elizabeth Warren would do in the supermarket checkout line.
Let's bring out another caller now. Stephen is with us in Madison. Stephen, hi.
Hi. You hit it right on the head. You got my question. My question was, you know, we're talking about fandom. What that is cult of personality. And I don't think cult of personality is good for politics. And I was gonna, my question was going to be, whatever happened to talking about policy and whatever happened to talking about issues? I don't care how cool a candidate is. And I'm 33 years old and I don't have Facebook or Twitter or anything like that. And I think that that demographic is very underrepresentative because nobody hears about us. But we do go vote.
Stephen, thanks a lot for the call. I can't remember if you actually used the phrase cult of personality in your piece, Amanda, but that was if you didn't use the phrase, the
yeah,
idea
I
was
did.
There. Okay,
I did. Yeah. You're my hero for not being on Facebook or Twitter. And yeah. And I think especially, you know, for people on the left, there are people who looked at the election of Donald Trump and they said, wow, this is a very scary cult of personality that's been built up around this person. And instead of rejecting that, I think people who are hoping to defeat Donald Trump this time around are building cults of personality around their preferred candidates. And maybe that is the, you know, strategically like a good way to try to win. But I think in the long run, it really distances us from what we should be talking about, which is like what we want for our country.
Stephen, thanks a lot for the call. That reminds me back in what the 2000 elections, there was the question, and this came from the media, but like, who would you rather have a beer with, George W. Bush or Al Gore? Mm-hmm. Have we changed that much? We've all often had these sort of personalized approaches to candidates.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in 2016, Doris Kearns Goodwin, the historian, made the point that, like, it hasn't always been about personality. So at some point, candidates were really representatives of their party and people were voting on party platforms. And it was a lot less about the personality of the candidate. That, you know, has not been the case, I think, for a long time. They've been pop culture figures for a long time. The thing that I think has changed is our relationship to that. So instead of, you know, just passively watching these people as sort of pop culture figures on television, we are actively involved in creating these personas around them. So it's not just the campaigns that are making them. It's not just the media that's making the persona. It's us. And that really involves us so much more in this whole scenario. And so it becomes, you know, a real question for all of us. Like, is this what we should be doing?
Stephen, thanks a lot for your call. Amanda, another concern, and this might be the most fundamental concern you bring up, is the idea that if we share a meme or create a meme or have a funny thing about a pop culture reference to our political candidates, we feel like we're being politically active and maybe we're really not. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think social media in general seems like a very democratic form in that everyone has a voice. Everybody can post what they like on Twitter. But I think that can be a deceptive feeling, especially when it comes to literal democracy, because we may feel like we have the power to sort of build these candidates ourselves. But in the long run, what we're doing is, again, creating these cults of personality around them that make them actually less accountable to us. Because the way that a fan treats a star is it's a mode of adulation. And I don't think that's the correct posture for us to have for our political representatives. I think what I say in the piece is that this fan culture has us working for candidates when really the candidates should be working for us.
It's a good place to leave it. Amanda, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Amanda Hess from the New York Times. She joins us for a look at fan culture in American politics. There are two big pieces on this she wrote over at the New York Times website. And you can share your thoughts over at Twitter. Tweet us at Central Time WPR.